first half, second half, like chalk and cheese.
That can't be my best bet, but it's up there.
Yeah, it's no stupid red card, that's for sure.
We'll give you the balls so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
I'm not fully keeping it together. Putting the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are coming to you on the evening of Wednesday, June 26, 2019. The United States men's national team has just defeated Panama and is through to the knockout rounds of the Gold Cup. And the U.S. women are, of course, taking on France in what will be a de facto Women's World Cup final, in that whoever wins that will be the favorite to make it. Rabbi Mark Goodman, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
That's not how finals work.
I mean, isn't there find me one significant journalist or expert or analyst or pundit who's looking at the remaining the quarterfinals for the Women's World Cup and who doesn't think that whoever wins between the U.S. and France should be the favorite to win out?
Yeah, but in 20 years, nobody's going to remember that the U.S. knocked out France in the quarterfinal or that France knocked out the U.S. in the quarterfinal. They're going to remember the final game. No matter how unfavored the second team is. So, I mean, this is not my banter topic argument. I'm just saying, it'll be a great soccer game and you should watch it. But, you know, I invited people over to, eat omelets at my house on the final day. I'm not moving that date up just because it's USA France. Also because I can't afford champagne and cheese. Which would be the nice thing to serve for.
Okay, that's France. Probably a.
So nobody's gonna come over to my house at 3 o'clock on a Wednesday or a Thursday. So
yeah, I might be dual screening it with like some reference document on the ready to click if I have to. I'm in a nice setup in the work office, Mark, where I don't have a whole lot of foot traffic around my cubicle, and it takes somebody like coming around and like being behind me and physically in my cubicle behind me in order to see one of my screens, so I might have to do it a little bit sneaky like that. I was also in Hobbs, New Mexico 12 hours ago, so I racked up a lot of billable work from stuff I had to do dealing with some monitoring wells and some plume formation in the groundwater on Sunday through Wednesday, so maybe I've already earned it at this point, but I'll find a way to figure it out. And listeners, I would encourage you to do the same, as this will probably be the best match in terms of quality and level of opponent for the women's national team of this World Cup so far. And
I spent my last 2 hours listening to the Democratic primary debate instead of watching Josie Altidore bike a ball in against Panama. So I feel pretty stupid right now. That's all that I know. But I watched DC Orlando and got to see Wayne Rooney knock it in from basically the other side of space. I think technically where he hit that ball is in Maryland. Having gone to George Washington University, I can't imagine that he was still within the District of Columbia when he hit that ball.
He was technically in his own half, so a further distance than both the David Villa half-court shot against the Philadelphia Union last year, a couple years ago, and a further distance than, of course, Latan's opening goal of his MLS career against LAFC. But shall we get into it, Mark?
We have to, because I've only given Matt 24 more minutes of my time because he started the clock extra late tonight because he was in New Mexico digging wells. Wherever Matt is, he's digging wells. I mean, maybe he's not actually digging the wells. Maybe he's just holding up a big fancy blueprint and pointing at some leatherneck and saying, "You've done that wrong. I think you've done that wrong. Oil is going to leak into the sand. You're going to destroy the climate." That's what Matt does, I think. That's at least what I picture Matt to do.
Ouch, but I'm kind of offended at your impersonation of my engineering voice, Mark, but as you said, we do not have time for me to actually do any corrections, technical or otherwise, to what you just said, so we'll move on to it. Listeners, maybe. This past Saturday on a very, very abbreviated MLS weekend, the Colorado Rapids drew Vancouver Whitecaps at BC Place by a score of 2-2. The Burgundy boys came out absolutely firing in the opening 20 minutes. Diego Rubio gets on the end of a cross on a corner from Nicholas Mesquita. In the 8th minute, you had the ball go through the middle of the goal area with nobody really going for it, and then Diego Rubio with two Vancouver Whitecaps defenders in the area, completely unmarked, and puts it in the back of the net. The Rapids rightfully so ahead, as the Whitecaps were sleeping, literally, Mark, through the first 30 minutes of this game, and then Andre Shinyashiki with a great tap-in off of a header from Kai Kamara, Nicholas Mesquita on the secondary assist there on a patented counterattack by the Burgundy boys. The Rapids then kind of shut it down after the 30th minute mark. Diego Rubio draws or is forced into a PK against Ali Adnan just before halftime. Freddie Montero converts that, and then a very defensive and I would say underwhelming version of hashtag keep fighting in the second half, and Yordi Reyna scores on a set piece unassisted in the 80th minute off of a foul just outside the box. And I think if this game goes another 10 minutes, Mark, I would bet that the Vancouver Whitecaps find a way to get a third goal. Mark, what was your good thing from this past Saturday's draw against the Caps?
I have a question before you get to that. How do you do these recaps? Because they're so good, and they're all original, and you have your own little phraseology that goes into them. And like, do you write these out in advance? Do you like give yourself little notes and then riff? Like, how do you do this?
A lot of it is practice, so some of it is methodology, and then a lot of this is just recapping some of the main tweets that ultimately get be incorporated in some aspect. My thoughts turn into tweets, and then those become a blueprint or bullet points of things that I want to address in my takeaways piece and for the recap for the game for the night of, Mark. And then all of that kind of gets, I rehash that while looking at the highlights, and then I just have a very cerebral memory of what happened in the game and some of the things that I want to point out that then just kind of comes in that, off the cuff and in what I'm covering.
For me, like, literally, I have to listen to your recap, otherwise, like, I don't even remember who we played. That's just how my memory works, and also, I enjoyed much of my college years in all of the many inebriated and inebriating ways that smash your brain cells, into little atomic bits. So, I couldn't hold all those thoughts even if I wanted to, but even if I hadn't damaged my brain back in the day, I don't think I can remember all that stuff. My brain just doesn't work that way. But that being said, like, it's greatly appreciated, number one. But number two, I don't remember what I was about to say. And that's because I've inebriated and smashed my brain to bits. What's my good thing? My good thing is a broader, you know, ethereal 30,000 foot kind of thing, which is that, there was a time like 8 weeks ago when fans would have been over the moon happy with a 2-2 draw. And from a lot of the people that I, especially on the road, from a lot of the people that I kind of interact with on Twitter and on Reddit, and otherwise, people were legitimately disappointed that we dropped points here and wound up with a 2-2 draw. That's amazing. You know, we should be thrilled. This was the sixth league game without losing in a row for Colorado. And yet a lot of people expressed to me that they were disappointed, which I think is a legitimate point. There's no doubt that this team probably shouldn't be dropping a 2-0 lead. But like, my good thing is that the fan base is back to the point of being a normal soccer fan base, where we expect to win soccer games and we expect to hold leads, and not that we are beaten down by life and thrilled with 2-2 draws. What about you?
I'm going to say the opening 30 and really the opening 20 minutes of this one, Mark. The Rapids came out, and guess what? They actually pressed. Even when they didn't have the ball, they said, okay, we're going to have Kai Kamara up top. We're going to put one other attacker up top, and we're going to press whoever has the ball on the back line for the Vancouver Whitecaps. And when we do have the ball, we're going to move it relatively quickly like we've seen from them in the past. This was a fantastic, not slider. What am I thinking of? A curveball metaphorically from Connor Casey to show a new look, something that clearly the team had time to prep for and actually execute, and they executed it to a T for the first 20 or 30 minutes against a team that was not prepared to play. And so that was, you know, that was a great nuanced thing. That's where this is clearly something that Casey had developed that the players absorbed and executed in real time. And the other team was completely not prepared for it. I would not be shocked at all if, you know, I gave Mark Dos Santos truth telling serum at halftime and said, were you expecting the Rapids to come out and press for the opening 20 minutes and really try and get on you early? And he probably would have said absolutely not. So that was great. But let's get to where Connor Casey maybe didn't have a good game plan. Where do you want to start on bad things, Mark?
It's hard for me to say. There's only one, which is the team shot had 15 shots in the game. The Colorado Rapids had 15 shots in the game. They took 12 shots in the first half and 3 in the second half. That's all you need to know about this team. The other thing is that this is not different, but I think it frames what I just said a little bit, which is that the Rapids lost possession 70-30. To Vancouver, 69-31, if you want to be pedantic. And Matt, you're an engineer who counts the little drops of oil that falls out of, you know, Halliburton's well, so I know you want to be pedantic. And so what that means is, and that 70-30 didn't change from the first half to the second half. So that meant that, the Rapids changed the way they counterattacked. They ceded possession to the opponent, which is a thing that we are gonna do for the rest of the season as, Connor Casey's, counterattacking low block, bunker deep defense, plays itself out. But something drastically changed in the second half where not only did we cede possession, but we, really didn't put forth a lot of numbers past the center of the field, and that meant that we weren't really trying that hard to get into the final third. There were only a few shots within the box in the second half, or even passes, sorry, in the second half in the box. So, you know, that's a big shift. And I think it's not a terrible idea to say, all right, we're going to hold on for dear life and try to hold a 2-0 or a 2-1 lead. But, you know, you really put yourself in a bad situation when the other team knows you're not going for goal. It just means that they can commit more men forward and they can kind of Jedi mind trick you into playing more and more defensively while they play more and more offensively, which inevitably almost always results in a goal.
No, I agree with you, Mark. You know, as much as I loved what I saw from this team in the opening 20, 30 minutes or so, I hated pretty much everything from, you know, let's say 35th, 40th minute at the absolute latest on through the end of the game. I could understand Casey saying, okay, it's late in the first half, we're up 2-0, let's drop back in our usual, you know, mid-block, you know, 1-4-4, 4-4-1, 4-2-2-1-1 wide, whatever you want to call it, the double pivot in the middle, the two relatively wide pushed up wingers, and then somebody floating or immediately underneath Kai Kamara. I'm okay with doing that for the final 10 minutes of that first half because you say you're up 2-0, let's just try to get into the locker room 2-0 and protect that. But that's kind of predicated on you not making any critical mistakes that allow Vancouver to get back into the game. Diego Rubio gives up a PK. Freddie Montero converts it. That's exactly the thing that you really didn't need. And you could argue, you know, it was effectively a buzzer beater in terms of the end of the first half, you know, coming finally in stoppage time. And then there really weren't any adjustments in the second half. The Rapids still kind of continued to play defensive. As you mentioned, they weren't creating a whole lot of opportunities, but anything that was going on from the success of the counterattack wasn't really there from a wide standpoint. And I'm just not really sure what Connor Casey was thinking on that. You know,
I also thought that Diego Rubio defending that deep was really weird. Like, when's the last time you saw a striker, winger, attacking mid inside the box in their own third, yanking a guy down with his shoulder? Like, that was weird to me. And I get the idea that, like, you know, as a coach, you say to a lot of your players in certain situations, you know, you got to cover for a man if he's lost, or you've got to come all the way back. But, like, he had no business being there, and somebody else was supposed to be doing that job, or someone should have been stepping to him face up instead of, you know, having Diego Rubio yank him backwards.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Mark. That was really befuddling to me. And I mean, to your point about Vancouver saying, all right, Colorado's not going forward, we're going to push guys up. You know, Ali Adnan, who's normally a left back for Vancouver, was effectively a left winger the entire second half. And I didn't understand how Connor Casey didn't try to account for that, or they didn't try to exploit that in the attack. You know, I personally, not that I'm in any way positioned to coach in Major League Soccer at all or at any level of professional soccer, I would have moved Diego Rubio back in the middle of the park underneath Kamara, his natural position, and I would have moved Mosquito out wide, who's very used to doing winger-like things in that play, and then I would have forced to have some sort of speed option to check against Ali Adnan. And we didn't really see that from Diego Rubio. You know, I've said it for a couple of weeks now. You know, I think Rubio's the most out of place of those 4 to 5 players who are going to play on the wing. You know, I think one thing we do have to say for Colorado is I would argue their best two options at those positions, the left and the right wide midfielder, are probably Jonathan Lewis on the left, who is with the U.S. national team still, and Sam Nicholson, who is out with a hamstring injury he sustained earlier in the week. So I understand that, but do more with what you have. And I thought some other adjustment they could have done could have made an impact. And they didn't really have a whole lot of bench options. You know, the one sub that they made was Sebastian Anderson in the 77th minute for Andre Shinyashiki. At that point, the game was still 2-1. Maybe you throw in Dylan Serna there and have him try to do something from a counterattack standpoint. You know, maybe you move Kellen Acosta into a different role and bring in Johan Blomberg, who's been not terrible in the games that we've seen him. There wasn't any adjustment in terms of shape or style of play or approach or anything. Connor Casey basically held pat for the final at least 50 minutes in that game, and you saw in the final 5 minutes of the first half that was a recipe for disaster, and ultimately it was disaster in the form of getting a 2-2 draw. Let's move on to big thing, Mark. Any other closing thoughts we want to have on this match?
It was sad to see Zach McMath not have a great game. It's weird. And the other thing that's a related concept is in the battle of let's get revenge on our former team, the Rapids won, even though they only drew 2-2, because Kai Kamara had a goal. Nicholas Mosquito had either one or he had an MLS assist and a regular assist, I think, on the day. And they both were just, Kamara and Mosquito almost had another one early in the first half. They both had great games, or at least the first half. And Zach McMath had that one play early in the first half where it was a kind of a normalish shot, and he deflected it with his hands. It popped up and over his head. He had to reach back and sweep it off the line at the last second, and it turned into like, you know, Yakety Sacks, like, disaster moment for him. I was glad. I mean, I should not be rooting against the Rapids, but I was honestly glad that that goal didn't go in, because it would have been so embarrassing for him, and I'm a stand for Zach McMath. But you know, the long narrative here is Kai Kamara and Mosquito made their former team feel bad about losing them, and Zach McMath did not accomplish the same thing.
Mm-hmm. My big thing just relates on to something that I've been talking about really for the last couple of shows now, Mark, that I still, there are huge error bars right now for me in terms of understanding between where the Rapids were at the end of the losing streak and now in terms of how good they actually are. And I still have some doubts based on the quality of composition, how much just the new coach bump was an effect. And I think we're past the point, you know, at this point now where if it's just hearing a different voice that's Connor Casey rather than Anthony Hudson, you know, regardless of how good that second voice is, I think we're past the point where that's no longer new effect. I think that's worn off, and now whatever's propagating going forward will be the actual result of how good the players are and what Connor Casey's doing with the assets that he has. But I still, just between that, the injuries and all the other things, I'm still not sure whether or not what we've seen from the Rapids, how different that is from where they were before then. I sense that they're somewhere in between, you know, the 2 points from 13 games, you know, last in the Western Conference to where they've been, you know, say going into the loss to New Mexico in the Open Cup. And this was another data point. This is a critical game for the purposes of jumping teams to try and get into the Western Conference playoff race. You know, yes, the Rapids are only 4 points below the Red Nine, but there's 5 teams that they have to jump in the process of that. One of those teams being Vancouver Whitecaps. In that, Saturday's game was a 3-pointer. The Rapids were up 2-0 after 20 minutes. That is a game that a playoff team sees out and gets a win in, and the Rapids did not do that. And it was against a relatively weak Vancouver Whitecaps side who are missing players due to injury and international call-ups. And they're obviously going to be missing guys for a bit longer, as most of those call-ups are Canadian internationals who are through the knockout rounds of the Gold Cup. So good for Canada, bad for the Whitecaps in that it was good for the Rapids, and the Rapids could not take advantage of that. And the Rapids are about to hit murder's row in terms of their schedule, and we're going to get a much better idea of how good they are playing quality teams who are on a good run of form. And I'm nervous that if, you know, they don't get something against, you know, Friday's opponent, and let's see what happens against New England Revolution, and so that maybe we're going to start to realize that the Rapids were not as good as their five-game unbeaten streak, and maybe it turns out they're still going to be a middling team in the Western Conference. Maybe not wooden spoon contender, but comfortably outside the playoff race. With that, Mark, let's look to this Friday's game. This coming Friday, listeners, at 8 o'clock. It'll be a late start on Friday night at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. The Colorado Rapids will be hosting the current Supporters Shield leaders in Los Angeles FC. The Rapids have currently played 17 games out of a 34-game season. That gets us to the halfway mark in the 2019 Rapids MLS season, Mark. After the results of this past week, they are sitting back in 12th in the Western Conference, 1 point behind Vancouver Whitecaps. They are still ahead of FC Cincinnati in the Supporters Shield race, but they have 16 points from 17 games played, 4 wins, 9 losses, and 4 draws, and a -4 goal differential. They'll be taking on LAFC, as I mentioned, who are comfortably top of the West and the Supporters Shield standings with a 6 and a 5 point lead in all those. They have 37 points from 16 games played, 11 wins, 1 loss, and 4 draws, and a +6 goal differential. That one loss came in a midweek road game against the Vancouver Whitecaps.
That's not a +6 goal differential. That's a +26
goal differential. and they also have a away record of 4-1-3. This will, however, be just their third game all time playing at altitude. This is a juggernaut in MLS for me, Mark. If I had to guess right now, I would say that they're on pace to be, by a number of regular season metrics, let's just go with total points in the post-shootout era of MLS 34-game season. They've got a chance to beat what the New York Red Bulls did last year and what Toronto FC did a couple of years ago. Bob Bradley's their head coach. What he's gotten out of that midfield three with Mark Anthony Kays and Latif Blessings of the world is straight up nasty and terrifying. They haven't missed a beat in Lorenz Simon departing the club as goalkeeper. Eddie Segura has stepped in and been fantastic. I think Walker Zimmerman is well on his way to being the favorite for the Defender of the Year. They've got two excellent fullbacks in Jordan Harvey, who's mostly their left back, and then Steven Badesher, who's their right back, and then of course they've got a bunch of headed monsters in the attack, starting with Carlos Vela, their number 10, who is not with Mexico for the Gold Cup. He was snubbed, depending on who you ask, by Tata Martino, so he'll be in with the squad. They have Adama Diamande and Christian Ramirez, who they can both play at number 9. Both of them have kind of been underwhelming, but there's been some issues and injuries and some form issues as well. And then they have Diego Rossi, who is the Robin to Carlos Vela's Batman. This team is stacked from front to back, Mark. What do you see in them, and how the heck do the Rapids try to get a result against them on Friday?
They got Lee Wynn off the bench. I mean, like, that's, I mean, he's been injured for a lot of the season, but he came back and he can slip in and do things. This is just a loss. We're gonna lose, and that's what's gonna happen. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. There are some games that you go into and you can prepare as much as you can for them. But there is no tactical plan by which Colorado can get out of this game with a win. It's possible they could draw. But it requires the offense being all fired up. I mean, I think the thing that really hurts Colorado the most is that I think their best player, offensively is Jonathan Lewis, and they won't have him. And that's a killer, for Colorado. The flip side of that is that, LAFC won't have Mark Anthony Kay because he's still away, also with Canada for the Gold Cup. So, it's not quite an even trade because, LAFC can slot in a whole bunch of other folks there. I just think this team has way too much firepower they're working really, really well. Every player is playing at the top of their ability. They come in what looks like a 4-3-3, but defensively it kind of drops back into like a flat 4-4-2 quite often, or a 4-4-1-1, depending on how you look at it. Sometimes it looks 4-1-4-1. But point is that this team is the best team in Major League Soccer. They're averaging 2.36 points per game. They're on pace comfortably to be the best team in MLS history. The question for them is not whether they win Supporters Shield. I'd say that that's, without something dramatic going wrong, almost sewn up halfway into the season. It's very likely they'll win Supporters Shield. It's whether they'll go forth and win MLS Cup, and potentially, since they're still in the Open Cup also, whether they can challenge Toronto by pulling the treble. I think that's the conversation. So, you know, can they win on a Friday night against Colorado at altitude? The answer is yeah, duh. Like, this is just a hiccup for them. The Rapids have to think very differently than LAFC about how they prepare for this game. I just don't think that the way Colorado sets up, which is counterattacking and defending deep, is going to work at all against an LAFC team that will possess the ball. They won't turn it over in any dangerous areas, and they will smother you. You know, pointless possession is the thing that SKC does when they're not at their best. That's not LAFC this year. They are possession with purpose. They give it to Vela, you know, right on the edge of that final third, and then he just destroys you. Like, he'll go in by himself, or he'll play the 1-2 to somebody else and do things. And there's nothing you can do to stop it. So we're just going to lose this one. It'd be really nice to not lose by too many goals.
I've got a couple notes to make on this, Mark. You mentioned Marc-Anthony Kay missing for Canada. LAFC will also be without center back Walker Zimmerman, who is, of course, with the United States men's national team. So obviously two big players there kind of up the middle that they're missing. Danilo Silva, probably the most likely to slot in at center back, Brazilian, 32 years old. And Eddie Segura will probably be just being the main anchor on there. They also have, I don't know how we haven't mentioned him given our profane love for D-mids, Mark, but let's talk about Edward Atuesta, who is a Colombian international, just 22 years old. Nobody heard of him when Bob Bradley brought him in. And you could argue that he's gotten as much, if not more, out of Atuesta than he has Lee Wynn or Latif Blessing. Has just been solid on both sides of the ball. Not really a true, you know, I would say more a number six than a number eight, but does a lot of number 80 things. And then if we're talking about just looking at the stats and comparing with what he does, Mark, guess what Edward Atuesta's MLS fantasy value was at the end of the spring season?
The minimum, maybe?
No, he was $10.4 million, Mark. Oh, that's how good he was as far as passing, as far as defensive bonuses, as far as offensive bonuses. For those of you who want comparison right now, listeners, Wayne Rooney, is worth $11 million. Like most strikers, number 10, Edward Atuesta as a number 8, number 6 for LAFC is priced at the level of a barely playoff team's best attacking player, forward or central attacking midfielder would be priced. That is how good he is in MLS fantasy. That is a reflection of all the actions that he has, defensive and offensive and passing, just being a really, really solid middle of the park guy. He is a 22-year-old equivalent of Michael Bradley in that aspect. And I feel like anything that you would lose in Walker Zimmerman being out and Danilo Silva being in, Atuesta will be able to fill, or they'll just have other ways of filling in that gap that are still going to make things relatively difficult for Kai Kamara. The other thing to maybe talk about this team here, Mark, is that they will be relatively well rested, even though they're still in the U.S. Open Cup. Unlike the Rapids, they have not played since this past Thursday, the 20th of June, where they played and hosted San Jose Earthquakes and defeated them as part of the busy week that all of MLS has with the 4th of July coming up next week. They're playing Wednesday at Sporting Kansas City, but you figure, you know, okay, LAFC had what, 8 days rest going into the game on Friday. They don't play until the following Wednesday. Yes, they have to travel, but it's against Sporting Kansas City, who are depleted and injured right now. If there's a game that Bob Bradley's thinking, let's go all in with my starters right now, it's probably the Colorado game, and then you figure you can get away with the bench players and some rotation against Sporting Kansas City. In that, I don't think you're going to see a weaker version of LAFC because they're playing on a Friday or of schedule congestion or because they're playing at altitude. Let's talk about Carlos Vela, Mark, who I would say is the epitome of the MLS modern 10. Normally, listeners, when I think of a number 10, I think of the traditional number, a Diego Maradona type, a Lionel Messi type, who's your central attacker, who's going to string the ball together, who's going to connect things from the back midfield, and then also try and do some dancing around in the box, create scoring opportunities, and ultimately pass to your forward for tap-ins. And Carlos Vela does that, but he does that as the modern number 10, where he's just an attacking playmaker who's on the ball all the time, but also all over the field. He'll start normally on the wing, but he'll cut inside. He'll flip back and forth throughout the game, along with Diego Rossi. So he's not easy to guard compared to some of the other players who the Rapids have played during their winning streak, Mark, like a Federico Higuain, who is relatively central, where you could just say Jack Price and one of the center backs, you're going to be committed to him. Same thing with Darwin Quintero, holding midfielder, center back, you're going to be committed to him. Every single defender at some point is going to have Carlos Vela immediately in front of them, breathing down their neck on the ball in this game. In that, I think it's going to be much, much harder to game plan around Carlos Vela, and that's what really terrifies me from a defensive standpoint, especially if the Rapids are getting less than 40% possession in this game. In that, Mark, I don't see how they keep LAFC off the scoreboard in this game, and just with what they're going to have defensively, unless it's just bunker, counter, try and win a foul, and then try and beat Danilo Silva in the air, I think the Rapids are going to have a hard time from the run of play getting anything on LAFC, even if they're doing it on the counterattack. If you told me Sam Nicholson and Jonathan Lewis were both available, and we're going to be able to start and perform in the whole 90 minutes, I might be able to see and draw on this one, but I think the best the Rapids can probably hope for is an early set piece. Maybe they catch a defender sleeping and they get a set piece goal, and then it's maybe bunker down and it's squeaky bum time for a solid 30 minutes and let LAFC have the ball and sit deep for a solid 60 minutes probably and hope that you can get a 1-1 draw on this one. I think the Rapids can get a draw on this game. I still think the most likely result of the three, LAFC win, draw, Rapids win, will probably still be an LAFC win. In that, it'll be points dropped, but, you know, this is like LAFC is going to do that to a lot of teams that the Rapids are going to compete with for a playoff spot in this one. But, you know, Saturday's game was a draw that felt like a loss. I think if the Rapids get out of here with a draw, it'll be a draw that definitely feels like 3 points, if not more.
Yeah, I'll just add, I think I like what you said. If we want to be pedantic and nerdy about what is Carlos Vela or how does he play the position, when you said he was a 10, I was thinking in my head, like, it's true because that's what people were telling me last year about his position, and that's a lot about how Bob Bradley was talking about Carlos Vela. But he plays the 10 like Messi plays the 10, in the sense that Messi plays it almost as a wing, which is not really how a 10 is normally thought of. In that respect, a lot of classic soccer position nerds would say he's like a 7. If you look at the way Bob Bradley writes out his lineups, or if you look at the way he's been categorized on MLS Fantasy, he's categorized as a forward, which means he's definitely not a 10. Which also, he always plays kind of between the lines. He likes to have Diamande or Christian Ramirez, you know, lead the line in front of him to hold up that space for him. Sometimes if there's two strikers ahead of him, he's in that space recessed behind them, which makes him what's often called by classic tactical nerds, especially in the Premier League, a false nine. So you can call him a 10, you can call him a false nine, you can call him a 7, and all of those are technically sort of accurate, and I don't think anybody would fight. One last thing I want to say on the roster of LAFC, which just shows, I think it's just an interesting point to show how much they got the roster right by comparison to the Colorado Rapids. They missed on one of their DPs, Andres Horta, and Horta was sent home about a month ago to Portugal. Where he plays for SC Braga, and basically was returned after 15 months of not being effective at all and having some really terrible games, in fact, which means that LAFC has an open DP slot. And knowing the way LAFC spends money and the amount of insane cash they have behind their team, they have an open DP slot, and the secondary transfer window opens up in about 11 days. So I would keep your eyes out on the rumor wire for seeing who LAFC could bring in. I don't think there's – I think short of maybe the top 15 players in the world – I think everybody else is a definite possibility. If you haven't heard of them, whoever they get is likely to be someone spectacular anyways. They probably will go get someone who's on the young side as opposed to the old side, but they will likely go to one of the big leagues, and they will likely be willing to pay a 7 or 8 figure transfer fee for whoever. By comparison, the Colorado Rapids only have one DP on the roster right now. They won't be going to get anybody at midseason, and I have spoken to folks in the front office, and the Rapids would like to avoid, in general, paying transfer fees, because transfer fees are very, very difficult to deal with on your salary budget. They really hit your TAM or your DP money and your salary cap in ways that can cripple a team for years. The last couple times the Rapids have paid a transfer fee, it worked out really badly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to clarify that, Mark, what happens with when you think about the actual money transfer with the transfer fee, effectively the transfer fee comes in a big lump sum, and then depending on future considerations, that can be due at a separate date. From a accounting standpoint, that happens immediately. So the Rapids paid a transfer fee for the now departed Nana Boateng. They paid a transfer fee for Skel Shingashi. As soon as the transfer became official and the paperwork cleared and officially they got those players' rights, and that money was sent to the parent clubs that they were purchased from. From an MLS standpoint, they look at the total money invested for the player over the course of the length of the contract. So that includes player bonuses, that includes the transfer fee, that includes other things. All of that collective sum of money that you say over the course of the contract you are going to spend on that player, that all gets spread out over the course of the length of the contract. So for a TAM player, as opposed to just paying that transfer fee up front, that transfer fee is spread over the length of a contract, say a 4-year contract, like with the case of Jack Price. Therefore, you're getting hit, as opposed to just saying, we have all this TAM now, we want to spend it now. That is TAM that you are earmarking for 2020, 2021, 2022 and beyond. And that's hard for a finance conscious team like the Rapids that say, let's spend the money now and we'll deal with it later because we've got bottomless pockets. For the LAFCs, the NYCFCs, the Atlantas of the world that make life much easier for them on the international transfer market. Two last things that I'm going to point out on that, Mark. One, going back to the DP roster spot, just off the top of my head, like if I'm thinking, oh, LAFC's like, oh, we have an open DP slot, I can't think of an obvious position that they need to spend it in. They really have no position of weakness right now, and I would argue that you could take Carlos Vela off this team, and LAFC are still probably a playoff team. That is just how good they are and how much depth they have and all the good stuff that Bob Bradley's done. And the last thing I'll bring out, just getting back to Carlos Vela, on that note, Mark, you made a couple really good points that depending on the era of soccer that you are from or that you're used to and the part of the world that you're in, you would have a different nomenclature, a different term, jargon to describe Carlos Vela. And I think that speaks to how much of how good his intangibles are and how good he is. My dad has this really, really common motif that he'll bring up with really quality players in any sport, really, that he says, pick a player that you think is a great or one of the all-time greats, and then pick out what you think he or she does best. And if you have a hard time pointing out like one key thing that they do that's really, really good, that's the indication of their greatness, because the greats truly don't just have one absolute talisman that makes them better than everybody else. They're really, really good at everything, and there's a handful of things that they're just 10% better than, or just 1% better in the absolute key moment. If I think of Michael Jordan right now, Mark, yes, he was a fantastic shooter. He was a great athlete, but there isn't just one thing that I can think of that he was particularly good at. He was physically indestructible, but he wasn't just the greatest pure bench presser, like 40-yard dash, when I think like the high jump to test, you know, how much vertical you have. He wasn't the best of that in the NBA world. You could argue that he was one of the smartest. He certainly had intelligence. That's critical to, I think, any aspect of sport. But it's not just one thing that you said that he was better than everybody else. What's the key thing about Latif Blessing? He's faster than everybody else. What's the key thing about Lee Wynn? He's more skilled than everybody else. What's the key thing about Kai Kamara? He's better than a lot of people in the air. But that's the one thing that you think about when you think of those three players. You'd have to think on what's a second thing that they do that's, you know, top 5% in MLS over the course of their MLS career. You'd have a really hard time coming up with a third thing. That's why an aging Lee Wynn, a Kai Kamara, a Latif Blessing are budget players, or I think Kai Kamara is technically on targeted allocation money, why they're not DPs, why they're not, you know, the single-handed most critical focal point of the teams that they're on, and why they're probably not considered as of right now the best players in MLS or a world-class player. Whereas I can name four or five things that Carlos Vela does that are all good. That he's really, really fast. He's really skilled on the ball. He's good on set pieces. He's good on setting up players. He's good on faking with his hips and making runs and occupying the space. He's really good at drawing fouls right now. Those are all things that he does that he is top 10 in MLS in. That's why he gets paid the big bucks and why he's probably winning MVP this year. One thing that I want to address, Mark, before we get to our one Ask HDHL this week, I'll say that this is my submitted Ask HDHL. I don't particularly care about this, but I want to know your opinion. The All-Star rosters came out this week. No Colorado Rapids players, and then Nick Raimondo picked as a commissioner pick over Tim Howard. Your general thoughts?
I think it's deserved. Tim Howard hasn't had a good year in a couple years. Tim Howard was one of the best goalkeepers in league history before he was sold to England. So he had a lot of the kind of glory of, he was also the number one for the U.S. men's national team. So I think one of the things about a commissioner pick for a guy like Nick Raimondo is that it's a lifetime achievement award. One of the things that's been noted repeatedly on one of our favorite other podcasts, which is Extra Time Radio, the official MLS podcast. One of the fun things about that podcast is me and you, Matt, we're independent journalists. We get to say mean and nasty things about Major League Soccer or the Colorado Rapids if we want to. They're a little bit stuck saying the standard corporate line. But they've made some really interesting points regarding Nick Raimondo's career. Nick Raimondo, in his entire MLS career, he never played abroad. He only played in Major League Soccer. He was never the number one for the U.S. men's national team, and he's never been goalkeeper of the year. And so I think to some degree, the commissioner giving him the final chance, the final slot on the All-Star team to play against Arsenal is an opportunity to say, hey, you know, you are a respected player. We love you. We'll miss you. And here is an important honor at the end of your career. Wait, they're not playing Arsenal, they're playing Atletico Madrid, right?
Yes, in Atlanta. In Orlando.
Yeah, it's funny that I immediately went, well, Arsenal's coming to the United States, they must be playing MLS. And I was like, wait, I don't think they are. It's Atletico, but oh well. Anyways, yeah, I'm fine with it. And also, you know, last point on this is that, you know, we all know that Tim hasn't really stood out the last couple years. With the Rapids, he's been fine. I'll crunch the numbers eventually to see how this season's going. Last year, he was a slightly below average goalkeeper in Major League Soccer. This year to date, I think he's been average or even slightly above average. But we'll crunch some numbers later and see. But you know, I don't think there's an argument to say he deserved by his play a spot on the All-Star team. Who gets that third spot ahead of him is almost immaterial.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Mark. You know, I've been on the record on a number of different mediums that I don't particularly care about the MLS All-Star game. Like, I'll still watch, but in terms of like my watching interest versus, you know, how much I'm all in on that or committed to understanding it or making a big deal of who's on the team or how the team plays, like, I couldn't really care less. Let everybody get on the field so everybody can have their moment for the players that it matters to. Let's see them play some fun soccer, not take it too seriously. If that means Thierry Henry's, you know, doing keepy uppies for for 40 yards with nobody marking him. I'm totally fine with that. And you know, let's see a fun game that isn't necessarily, that's lighthearted, that isn't really taken seriously. Let's get everybody on the field and make sure that nobody ends up getting hurt, especially if the game's on turf. Orlando City State Soccer Stadium, grass surface, thankfully. But in terms of like a Rapids player not getting it, you know, Don Garber usually goes for the sentimental pick with some of his commissioner picks. You know, it's somebody, you know, it's not somebody who's necessarily deserving in terms of what has immediately happened in the 6 months of MLS play prior to the All-Star game. I remember when Frank Lampard and Steven Gerrard, I think they came in the same number and they'd maybe played a total of 10 games combined for their respective MLS teams, and Don Garber put them on there because, you know, that would have been, you know, that was relevant from an international standpoint. And it was cool to see those guys, you know, included in the greater European stars on the team, even though from an MLS standpoint, they didn't deserve it. And as aging as they were, I don't think you could argue that they were 23. They were one of the two of the best 23 players on MLS in MLS at that time when they entered it. And you know, I wrote an article in the offseason, one of my evergreen contents for Last Word, where I did the in the NHL mark and in a lot of the college football awards, the awards are named after a particular player. So there was a really, really great goalkeeper in the 30s and 40s for the NHL whose last name was Vezina. The goalkeeper, the goaltender of the year award in the NHL now is called the Vezina Trophy. So I did that with all the MLS awards, and I had to throw Nick Raimondo as the goalkeeper award. You know, obviously the MLS All-Star is already named after Landon Donovan, one of only three players to win it multiple times. And I thought Nick Raimondo deserved of that, given, you know, he spent his entire career in MLS, you know, but to your point, he's never actually won it, which is a little bit ironic. So I had a hard time with that one. So I think this is a nice sentiment where, you know, Tim Howard is going to get all the love and admiration already. He's got plenty of stuff to where he's going to be in the limelight. You know, I'm sure he's going to get free tickets for Everton for life when he finally hangs up the boots. He's going to be relevant from a U.S. national team standpoint. I'm sure, you know, Red Bull Arena is going to throw him a big pregame or halftime party when he goes back, you know, to Jersey for the final time. Like, he's gonna get his fanfare and his swan song, and really, you know, Nick Raimondo's significance in that is really dependent on how good RSL are right now, and I'm not sure that they're gonna make the playoffs as much as I don't think the Rapids are gonna make the playoffs. And this is a guy, you know, who's been not taken seriously for most of his MLS career, and I know we're not, maybe, you know, we're gonna get some hate mail for the comments we've made, given he's an RSL goalkeeper, but he's 5'10". You know, he had great stuff at UCLA. He's been doubted his entire career. He literally got traded and then asked to go back when he didn't like the situation with New York Red Bulls. Real Salt Lake called and said, give us any one of your goalkeepers, like, we'll give you a random, like, expansion, like, pick for absolutely nothing. So he gets traded to RSL for literally, you know, a bag of soccer balls, becomes a legend with them, wins MLS Cup with them, is a regular with them, like 340 games and counting. And then, you know, like you said, he was never the number one for the U.S. national team. His U.S. national team career mark has spanned 16 years, and it's just unfortunate this guy was a, you know, relatively middle-of-the-road keeper in MLS, undersized, and came in at the end of the Casey Kellers and the Brad Friedels playing, and then as soon as, like, okay, I'm going to be the guy, oh, here's Brad Guzan and here's Tim Howard. So, and he only has 22 caps in his entire 16-year career with the U.S. national team. So, I mean, if he wants this one All-Star game and that means Tim Howard gets some extra rest or gets to go hang out with the fam in Memphis and that has him more recharged for whenever that next game is for the Rapids, and that benefits the Rapids and that hurts Nick Raimondo and RSL because he's got to travel midweek all the way to Orlando to probably not play. The other thing I'll say where the MLS All-Star game is still kind of a bunch of BS is, you know, over almost half the roster picked by the fans, and four Atlanta players got in, really only one of whom is even slightly deserving. So, you know, it's a popularity contest, and unfortunately the Rapids aren't sexy, and with some of the picks there, people in importance get to pick the people who they think are important, and Don Garber values Nick Raimondo's contribution to Major League Soccer, and I respect that.
No, they need to weight it better. They need to give the fans slightly lesser of a vote because of how whacked things are towards Seattle and Atlanta. My vote, of course, is completely biased. The North American soccer reporters deserve a stronger vote at that ballot. Two last things on Nick Raimondo. I think it speaks very highly of how good he was that a podcast on the Colorado Rapids can be respectful of Nick Raimondo and say, like, he's our enemy, he's our sworn hated rival, and yet he has earned our respect. I hope that in his final game in Colorado, he'll get a solid round of applause from the crowd, just as you would any adversary who wears the black hat in a cowboy movie. The last thing to say about this is, let's not go too far down the road on poor, poor Nick Raimondo, who's never been recognized, and boo-hoo for him. He won the 2009 MLS Cup which was a spectacular game. I remember that game. It was one of the first MLS Cups I remember really tuning into and paying attention to, and he was man of the match. So, I mean, that's pretty – you know, most players in the world will put aside – the MVP trophy or the goalkeeper of the year trophy or, you know, 50 caps with the national team to be able to have won the trophy for their club and be the man of the match in that game. So, you know, Nick's gotten his plaudits. He's all right.
Yeah, and he's going to hang up the gloves and probably immediately walk into some academy goalkeeping role with Real Salt Lake, and he's made plenty of money over his career, so I'm sure him, the wife, and the two kids are going to be fine, you know, enjoying their days, you know, as he is the watcher on the wall of the Wasatch. That was
he has a very big house in Salt Lake. He's fine.
Okay, one little correction that I do have to make for you, Mark, who said that you you hope Raimondo gets a nice little clap at the end of his last game in Colorado. Pending the playoffs, Nick Raimondo has already played his last game at Dick's Sporting Park.
Oh, and, I totally missed it. Yep, I was not paying attention.
It was during the losing streak in RSL 1, so I don't blame you. With that, listeners, let's go to our one and only Ask HTHL. This is kind of off of a Twitter thread from one of our tweets that we then self-submitted to Ask HTHL. So I guess, if nothing else, thank you to Jason Maxwell for bringing up the topic that we will now bring in. This was off of a tweet that we had from Holding the Highline, Mark, saying that we normally think Rapids Twitter overreacts to bad things, but y'all got a right to be mad about tonight, referring to the draw against Vancouver. Pitt squandered a great opportunity, didn't adjust, left door open, and Reyna took advantage. And then Jason Maxwell responded to that with a good example of why the brakes should be tapped on the air quotes remove Casey's interim tag and air quotes discussion. I have seen a lot, Mark, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Reddit, of some fans wanting the interim tag to be removed from Casey, that this could be over the course of, you know, a continued good run of form that the Rapids have an opportunity for this coming Friday against LAFC, or even if wait till the end of the season, if Connor Casey gets the team in the playoffs, the interim tag should be removed. We've both heard, obviously there's a bunch of rumors about the Rapids doing a full wide search, that Porrick Smith is not in a rush to make this move, that they're not going to do anything in the summer transfer window if they don't have the coaching search ironed out, and obviously this isn't something that Connor Casey's focused on. Connor Casey's focused on the Rapids getting results. Your take on Connor Casey as a potential candidate for this, and how much maybe we are victims of recency bias in those thinking that Connor Casey won a couple of games, immediately should be given the full-time job.
If that's not the most important question that the team has to deal with this year, I don't know what is. Because who you pick for manager is really a huge thing, especially considering that you could argue very strongly that in my entire life living in Colorado, Matt, which is no longer the case, I never saw them get the manager thing right. I saw them shortly after I came to Colorado hire Pablo Mastroeni, who had really been brought on right before then as like a technical advisor. And then when Oscar Pereja left, they were like, we don't have anybody to coach. Well, Pablo's a club hero. We'll put him in and see how he does. And then to Anthony Hudson. And, you know, I think the problem with Connor Casey is not that he's not a good coach. It's not that it's not that he doesn't potentially have the intellect or the skill. I think it's basically a problem of history and narrative, which is the club has only, what, 5 people on their ring of honor above the stadium, and they've already burned through 2 of them in the course of their life with the club. One of them, Pablo Mastroeni, and the other one is Paul Bravo. Both of whom used to work in the front office and don't anymore, and probably don't want to be associated with the club at all anymore for how things ended. Do you really want to take another guy off the Ring of Honor and see how he does for a year, despite the fact that he's never coached at a high level. And then potentially, you know, if it doesn't work out in a year, say, well, it's been fun. Goodbye, Connor Casey, and literally have nobody on the Ring of Honor except for Jamie Smith and Marcelo Balboa. Jamie Smith, who I haven't seen back at a Colorado Rapids game in 5 years, and Marcelo Balboa, who is contractually obligated to be at every Colorado Rapids game. So I don't know that you want to burn through your club legends like that. That's my take. That may be a weird side take, but I can't help but imagine that that's a legitimate worry of the Colorado Rapids, that sending Connor Casey out in offensive, sad, depressed, it didn't work out, and now we're never going to talk to you again way, would be a terrible way to end that relationship. Sending him off with a 21-gun salute and saying, thank you for doing your service to the club, now we're going to bring on someone who can build us forward for the next 5 years, it makes a lot more sense to me. So to me, it does not matter whether Connor Casey wins the next 17 games in a row or not. He probably shouldn't be the head coach of the Colorado Rapids to start 2020.
I agree with you, Mark. I guess I'll take the 30,000 or the MLS league-wide view on this, which is in the last offseason, I would say progressing over the course of the last maybe 2, at the most 3 years, MLS is up the ante in terms of what the caliber or the minimum requirement is in order to be a coach. We've seen some teams go out and have real, pulling power and gravity on the international level in terms of bringing in big names like a Tata Martino. But, you know, if I just look at some of the coaches who've been appointed, you know, in terms of recent coaching hires, you know, you have Frank DeBoer in Atlanta, who had, you know, a really, really poor start, but is respected and did a lot of really, really great things for some big clubs. Ajax, Inter Milan, or one of the Milans, I can't remember which, in Europe, you know, who is it in San Jose Earthquake? So I can't, Matias Almeida, who coached for 3 years at Chivas de Guadalajara while they were kind of going through administration. The players weren't being played and paid, and the players continued to play through the Copa MX final and the Champions League, all the way up through the final while not getting played. So being protested while they were playing, Matias Almeida won almost every single trophy there was to do in 3 years, which as far as Chivas de Guadalajara head coaches is concerned, is an eternity that he lasted. And he had an absolute dumpster fire there, and he managed to get the team to win on one of the few clubs in Mexico that still does not allow you to play international players. I would shudder to think, Mark, of any team in MLS arbitrarily just saying, we're not going to have any international players. Every single player on our squad who plays for us has to be eligible from the United States or the Canadian men's national team, if a Canadian team wanted to do that, and how good they would be just not being able to pull in South American talent or talent from Liga MX or players from Europe. And Almeida had success with that. New England Revolution, they brought in Bruce Arena. Yes, maybe an old guard, failed with the national team, but one of the most respected coaches in MLS history. And so, you know, over the course of an offseason, Caleb Porter got passed over for 2 or 3 jobs in there, and it immediately was assumed at this point that if a head coaching job opportunity opened up, Caleb Porter would have been the safety pick on that, in terms of, we went out and tried to get somebody internationally, we tried to get this guy, we couldn't make the money work, let's just go with Caleb Porter because he's available and he knows MLS. And now there's a lot of fans, you know, in Columbus, Ohio, who are thinking that he's a bust and should be fired for how the team has started. Caleb Porter had Portland Timbers as a perennial playoff team, as a budget team in the Western Conference, won MLS Cup, decided that it wasn't going to work out with the front office, parted on good terms, having made the playoffs that year, and then over the course of a year-long sabbatical, just hanging out with the family, like, MLS got to the point where Caleb Porter was an underwhelming head coaching hire, as a guy who had an MLS Cup ring to his name.
Yeah.
And so, like, at this point, like, I'm sorry, Connor Casey, no head coaching experience outside of this year, won a couple games, is playing relatively conservative defensive soccer, is just, like, so far below that level. Now, you know, if the Rapids had a Rapids 2 or a Rapids B team in the USL Championship or USL League 1, I would absolutely give him the next time that head coaching opportunity is up. but I think Connor Casey needs something else on his resume besides being player club legend to get an opportunity that doesn't immediately have me think, well, Porik Smith's going to give him 2 years, and then if it doesn't work out, he's going to get fired, and then right. Connor Casey's never going to want to step foot at Dick's Sporting Goods Park ever again.
And the, you know, to correct myself slightly, but to underscore your point, like, and it's a broader point about the evolution of American soccer, but it plays exactly into your, you know, admittedly brilliant point, Matthew, about understanding that the standard of coaching in MLS has grown. So the Rapids had an interim coach at the end of 2017, which is Steve Cook. And he got himself a job with OKC Energy at the end of that year and has been coaching for OKC for the last 2 years. This year has been a really good year for OKC. They're doing really well. Steve's having a good year. And the other thing is a lot of these USL teams, I mean, almost every team in USL is either at one of three stages of development at this point. Either they are a two team and they have no aspirations of growing into the first league. They're an expansion or a newish team and they're still kind of really excited about bringing soccer to their town, or they have MLS aspirations. I mean, there are 10, 12, 14 teams in the league that legitimately want to move up to Major League Soccer. You know, Las Vegas, San Diego, which has just announced that they're coming in. North Carolina has been very aggressive about it. I've talked to lots of folks at the Pittsburgh Riverhounds who think they're, you know, they will eventually get there. I think they're a long way off, but I think the possibility is there. They own their own soccer facility. It's in a beautiful location and it's supposed to be expandable up to 18,000. Plus there's no NBA team in town. So there are lots of reasons why almost every team in USL, Indianapolis, St. Louis, they all think they can go up. Those are great places for a coach like Connor Casey to go next because he gives them the shine of big time legitimacy. They give him a sandbox to play in without all the pressure. And he can save face by saying, like, you know, I am still a head coach of a major franchise. I mean, and to finally underscore the point, our poor listeners, since I moved to a USL city, have had to been told over and over again, guys, USL cities, it's okay. It's not bad down here. But the quality is very good. You know, the left back for the Pittsburgh Riverhounds played tonight for Guyana.
Who got a result?
And got a 1-1 draw. And that roster is full of USL players. So is the Trinidad roster. So is the Curaçao, actually the best players on the Curaçao and Panama and Nicaragua, they're all USL. So, you know, the standard is there. The quality is there. There's good players. There's no shame in dropping down to the USL championship for a guy like Connor Casey.
Yeah. So I guess the last thing I'll say and then we'll get out of here, Mark, is just a reminder that this is a long-term decision. This is something that Porik Smith and everybody with the club should take their time and do their due diligence with, and they should let things play out with the DP roster slot situation and just the fact that they're probably not getting anything done in time to really do something in the summer transfer window. Not that they have much flexibility in which to do so. Like, there's no real position for them to really make any rush. If anything, you know, let's get stuff off the books. You know, there's been not that I respect any of the sources that it's come out on, but there's been some rumblings that potentially Danny Wilson could be on the move or there'd be some interest from, like, a League One side, for example. Like, if there's an opportunity for that,
Oxford
if there's an opportunity.
United. Yeah. United.
If there's an opportunity like to, you know, if the club's pretty consistent, you know, if they're like last year, if there was an opportunity to, you know, let Skelshengashi go on a free, for example, you know, something of that level, I think they're going to do that. But in anything, it's going to be jettisoning out, you know, some of the old clutter in the cupboards to make room to do something new under that new regime. And I think they should let the rest of the season play out as it goes. Now, maybe Connor Casey does get something done. You know, if he wins the next 17 games, Mark, and wins the Supporter Shield, okay, let's take that into account. You know, if nothing else, if he's able to do something, continue to develop good relationships. If I were Porik, I would probably ask in a potential interview or sit down or contract negotiations with a potential next head coach who isn't Connor Casey. Like, I would ask him what he thinks about that. Maybe have Connor involved in one of those meetings. Say, hey, could we get along? You know, would you want me on the staff. You know, say what you will about the Anthony Hudson era of MLS. I think from an offensive standpoint for the players who were still on the squad, I think Connor Casey was a nice little bridge from that to connect the dots between the new regime and the new staff coming in and the existing players under the Pablo Mascherini era. And I think Connor Casey could do that again for whoever that next head coach is. I think worst case scenario, he gets an opportunity to stay as, you know, the offensive coordinator, do stuff with Kai Kamara. He's done great things with Andre Shinyashiki. I think he keeps that role, and I think he and that next head coach could work things out and have a functional relationship, given Connor Casey's standing within the club. You know, if that doesn't end up working out, then, you know, go work under Steve Trischut, or maybe at some point in a year or two, Steve Trischut wants to leave Colorado Springs Switchbacks, given that the Rapids have the affiliation and Brian Crookham's now the general manager of the Boys in Black. I think Connor Casey would definitely be a candidate to consider for that job. And maybe in there he works some kinks out or figures some things out or some of the stuff where he's not as tactically naive as he may have shown at times in the game against Vancouver. And then that's a better version if that means they're grooming him, you know, like a brand new minor league manager starting out in single A, working his way up and then eventually getting opportunity with the big club. Then I think that's something to consider. Obviously, Connor Casey has to be interested in that, but let things play out, let things set out as they may, and you know, if it ends up that the Rapids are still one of the worst teams in the Western Conference, then maybe Connor Casey isn't ready to take the job full time after all. Listeners, you can follow us on Twitter individually at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard, words at thedenverpost.com, and lastwordonsoccer.com, respectively. Head on over to denverpost.com/HTHL for a special deal on all our digital content, Mark's work, Rapids-related, sports-related, or otherwise. They've got a bunch of really great stuff covering the politics right now. As you know, the first of the million Democratic debates are going to happen. Denver Post has a lot of great stuff in the context of Colorado and the two Colorado politicians, Mark, who are running, Hickenlooper and Michael Bennett. Yes, correct. No Cory Gardner, but he is, Cory Gardner, I believe, is up for re-election in 2020. So that'll be interesting given some of his decisions in the Trump, during the Trump presidency. And then head on over to patreon.com/Rapids96podcast if you think we bring monetary value to your lives. @Rapids96podcast on Twitter. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL. Rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Mark, you need to go to sleep. Listeners, we'll see you next week. Go Pens.
Peace.